It's the Mayo News Football Podcast. I'm Rob Murphy. This is our Football Interrupted series with a Jason Doherty special on the line. Well, they are absolutely our regulars now in terms of our new format. We're going the three-way hosting plan for a little bit longer. Let's start with Mike Finnerty. How are you, Mike?
Evening, Rob.
And as always, John Gunnigan. Welcome along.
Hi, Rob. How are you doing?
I'm all right. We're just saying, Mike, the old fatigue is creeping in for people. Let's be honest. We can't deny it hasn't crept in a little bit for ourselves as well.
I don't know, Rob. Speak for yourself. That's my line and I'm sticking to it. yeah, look, we're what, six weeks or so, I think, into this new normal. And I think everybody seems to be feeling the strain a little bit wherever they are or whatever they're doing. But at the same time, we're trying to find the pleasures in life in the smallest things. And as our listeners will have guessed from the title of the podcast, I was lucky enough to get to talk to Jason Doherty last week, and it was a half an hour well spent.
Do you know, I was looking back at the Donegal game there about 3 months ago, John, just saw a few minutes of it, and Jason Doherty was on fire in those early stages in that game.
Yeah, he was. I mean, it was so unfortunate the way it turned out, you know, and I think, you know, looking at it on the because I wasn't there, as you know, and looking at the television on the replays, it looked like it was a stray Donegal leg that kind of ensured he landed as awkwardly as he did. And once he fell, you just thought, oh no, it is going to be serious, and it was. And I think he was such a loss. And I think all of, you know, the real diehard Mayo support would have realised that straight away. I think the you know, Jason is one of these players that the wider world isn't wholly attuned into, I suppose, and they don't fully appreciate his talents, but I think every Mayo supporter does. That was an awful loss that evening, even though we got through that night. I think it was yet another hole below the waterline heading into the Dublin game.
Mike, this might sound off a little bit, but you know, you're trying to scrape positives from the initial news that we were going to miss the rest of the league and maybe the start of the championship in the early days when you were still hopeful that we might be back pretty quick in the summer. And I was thinking, my God, I wasn't the only Mayo fan who was thinking it might give Jason Doherty a little bit of time to get ready for the summer. I guess that came up in your conversation, among other things.
Yeah, Jason Doherty was also thinking the same thing, Rob. I think, being honest. And as you're going to hear shortly, you know, irony of ironies, his first night back on the training pitch with Mayo was also the last training session before the lockdown. So he was just literally back in the group. He had just got a few minutes under his belt in terms of the warm-up. He was already typical of Jason, I suppose, and most top-level athletes. He was already thinking about what he was going to do a couple of nights later to build on that first session. And then, bang, the rug was pulled from underneath him. So as he said himself, frustrating is probably the word that springs to mind, but I can't get over the way these guys, and particularly anytime I've ever spoken to Jason, they immediately switch their focus when they have a setback into, okay, what can I learn from this? How can I improve? What can I use the time that is now being given to me? What can I use that to do? And as you'll hear throughout the interview, he has a list as long as his arm of, you know, exercises, projects, things he intends to achieve so that when football does come back, whenever that is, he's ready to go, he's raring to go. And as he says himself, hopefully the plan is that he'll be fitter, faster, stronger, better. But at the same time, I don't think we should understate, like, it was only when I mentioned it to Ger Flanagan today in the office and he started doing the maths. I mean, when you consider Jason was back on a football pitch less than 7 months after he tore his ACL. And I know from talking to him back in January, he achieved that because he did absolutely everything and more of what was asked of him by the physios and the guys at the Santry Sports Clinic. I mean, some of the stuff that he did was just so laborious, so difficult. It required levels of sacrifice and dedication that we can only, I think, imagine. You know, in terms of spending hours upon hours upon hours on your own, in your sitting room, in your gym, just, you know, as far away from the lights and from the big crowds as you can imagine, to get back on his feet again. And, you know, while we will obviously now focus on the fact that he's back on his feet, he's into that kind of last phase of recovery, what's come before now, I don't think any of us should take that for granted, because it's not everybody who can come back from an ACL in less than 7 months and get back on the training pitch.
Yeah, it is phenomenal, right? I was just, when you were talking there, Mike, I was actually counting the months before you said it. I mean, it's an amazing achievement. I think Jack McCaffrey did something similar with Dublin as well, and you think, like, he was just such an incredibly fit man as well. So yeah, I mean, it just is testament to the amount of work and dedication that these guys put in.
It says a lot as well about Jason, because I suppose this struck me over the weekend when I was transcribing the interview and just sort of thinking about it. Jason is one of those guys that Mayo supporters outside of Borough Shule wouldn't know particularly well, and without a doubt we all take him for granted. And, you know, you referenced it there, Rob. It's only when you look back at the Donegal game and you see what we then missed for the Dublin and Ireland semi-final that you begin to think, well, Jason Doherty has become one of the key parts in the Mayo team over the last 10 seasons. But because he doesn't have the five-star reputation of some of the bigger names, he doesn't have too many endorsement deals, as far as I'm aware, or sponsorship deals. He doesn't particularly court the media or social media. He just does his own thing. He works hard. He trains hard. He loves playing football for Mayo. He likes what he does for a living. And he just gets on with it. And for me, I first got to know Jason Doherty when he was playing schools football at Rice College. And having spoken to him the other day, I can say, hand on heart, he hasn't changed a whole pile. He's still very grounded, very level-headed, the nicest guy you'll meet, and has that fierce drive and determination that you have to play at the top level for 10 years and to get the very best out of yourself. And the good news is he's only 30, and all going well, you know, he's got plenty more years left in him.
Okay, we're working away in the background at, you know, developing new ideas, developing new technology. The really, really carefully trained ear amongst you may notice that there's a little bit of a different sound to our recording today. We're trying out a new app. We'll tell you more about that as it works for us, but just makes life a little bit easier for the editor at this end of the line. Mike, you were trying out some new recording device as well while you're talking to Jason Doherty.
Yeah, nicely put, Rob.
I picked my tone carefully there.
Yeah, I had the, take your pick. You could say I had the training wheels on, or I had my L plates. They're showing my age, not my N plates. I have my L plates on. And yes, solid, I think, rather than spectacular was the result. Mm. Things improved dramatically in the closing stages of the interview. But it does have a bang of the 1982 World Cup commentary type audio there in the early stages. You've got the snap, crackle and pop that comes with the old analog phone line. John Gunnigan is a good man to bring in when we talk about analog and digital.
Indeed, yeah. But Mike, you see, the times we're living in now, we're getting used to all manner of scrappy audio and video. So I don't think in these pandemic times, you don't need to be defensive at all about it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm down with the cool podcasters at the moment. Yeah.
Yeah, you seem to have worked that out amongst yourselves there.
No,
it's a
badge of honour.
This is good, because I've worked so hard on this. It's going to sound a hell of a lot better than people think it's going to sound now, because we've set the bar low. It's kind of raising it from there. So listen, just get past that at the start and you'll get well into what Jason is talking about. And we'll be back with you to close off the podcast. But here it is, the main part of this week's podcast. Jason Doherty kindly gave us his time. Big thanks.
J Stryker are proud sponsors of this podcast, when it absolutely, positively has to be financed on Wall Street. Visit our website at www.jstryker.eu.
So at this stage, we're going to welcome Jason Doherty to the Mayo News Football Podcast. Jason, last time we spoke, give or take, it was about 3 months ago, you were smack bang in the middle of your rehab program,
on trying to get back from your cruciate ligament injury. And I remember you saying to me at the time that you didn't really want to set specific targets, but you had the end of the National League as an aspirational goal, that was one of the possibilities for you. Of course, what a difference 3 months make. We didn't get to have the end of a National League, as it turned out. We may or may not get to have a championship. But I gather, going by your Instagram account last week, your rehab program seemed to go to plan. You were on a pitch. You were pinging what looked like 45s or long-range frees. So is it safe to say you've got some good news for us?
Definitely, yeah. Everything has gone to plan, to be honest. It's funny, actually, the very last session before lockdown, kind of the original lockdown happened, that they kind of, was it maybe the 11th or 12th of March, when there was no more trainings allowed. That last session was my first session where I did the 10-minute warm up with the team. So I was just getting a taste for it, and it was pulled away. So I was definitely, yeah, I was gearing up towards, I suppose, everything kind of plan, in terms of I was running, jumping, twisting, turning and all that now for a good while. So the plan probably had to get the fitness up and get the match sharpness in. So that's obviously changed. So now I'm probably getting from a physio's point of view, the ideal rehab window, a really extended window where I can really probably close the gap on all the different deficits, as opposed to, you know, usually you're probably going to be going back playing with small deficits here and there, whereas now I kind of can really go at the smaller stuff and make sure whenever we get back on the pitch, I'm kind of really good to go.
Mentally, Jason, what was that? Mentally, what was that like for you to work so hard and do so much to get back on the training pitch, and then literally within a matter of hours, probably, to find out that everything was gone into shutdown mode? I mean, it must have been mixed emotions, to say the least.
Yeah, it's frustrating, I suppose, really, when you just get a taste for it, and I kind of had, it was really starting to feel good in terms of, I felt like I was back, being able to do a lot of the stuff I could do before, especially just the ball work. I suppose I just got back to doing a few weeks of just changing direction with the big one and landing on us and catching ball and being tackled and kind of just bringing that into training with someone defending me. Literally, that the last night in Ballyhonus before we broke was where I had a tough session that night where I was kind of doing one-on-one stuff and with the physios. So it's probably frustrating, yeah, because I was kind of gearing towards, right, that's the next session, I might get a little bit longer in the warm-up. And the next session after that, I might get another bit longer, and all of a sudden I'll get a drill or two, and then I'll get a bit of club football in April, and all of a sudden it's a change, but sure, it is what it is. I'm lucky in this. On the flip side, I suppose I'm getting a chance now to really get it, like, you know, closer to 100%, as opposed to maybe trying to go back at 90% and then continue to improve it while I'm also trying to train and play. So there's pros and cons, yeah, but just, I suppose, frustration and just trying to make the best of it.
I'm guessing there's no short answer, but like, what were the last 6 or 7 months like for you? If you could just give us maybe a glimpse into the highs and the lows of the aftermath of suffering a serious injury like that.
In a weird way, it probably wasn't as bad as I thought. When I look back, and I think it was, let's say, when I look at other lads who've done it, and you're kind of thinking, I wonder how tough that is. It must be tough to come back mentally and trust your knee again and trust that you can land on it and do all this stuff. And while I haven't, I suppose, been in a, you know, like the tackling drills or a match base where I haven't been in the group training yet, so that's probably still ahead of me. I like, in fairness, it's been quite, all of the exercise I'm doing, I have gained a lot. I have a lot of confidence in it, which is probably the one thing I probably feared most, is that I do all the work, because I knew I'd do whatever the physio was saying, I'd do whatever the strength and conditioning guy says, but I was worried potentially that would I just be minding it, you know, just whether landing on it. But I trust in it, like, I've confidence in it, trust in jumping off it, pushing off it. So it's just to test it out now in a group situation. So it's overall, like, yeah, I don't think it wasn't as bad, because you kind of what really helped, I think, was, I suppose, doing it through in the King and Santry, and someone who's so experienced, was he very much kind of broken into different, like, 2 week, I suppose, segments, where it was just this is the goal at the end of the 2 weeks, work towards that, don't be thinking about anything else. And once I got my head around that, that made it a lot easier, because I wasn't, he quickly, I suppose, clamped out the thoughts of end dates and all that. So once I got that out of my head, it actually made the whole thing a lot easier. And in some ways, even just the mental break on as well, on top of that, was, it was loads of positives for that. The even just time, spending more time with myself in Dublin, less travel, like there's some pros to that as well, just to get the kind of the mental break in that respect. So, but now, I suppose, once kind of January hit and the guys were back probably on the pitch and matches were coming, that's when you kind of go, right, I'm sick of the gym here, I want to get out and contribute and help. So that's probably, that's towards the end, I was like, I suppose there was light at the end of the tunnel, and then that just changed.
When you have that sort of experience, Jason, when something like that happens to you, like now that you're out the other side, or certainly nearly there, when you look back, what kind of things do you learn from it, or how does it maybe change your outlook or your mindset as a footballer and as a human being?
For me, it's a massive change for me, because I'd never had a long-term injury. I think the longest time I'd have had was 7 or 8 weeks. I think, I don't know that we mentioned that the last time we spoke, in like maybe 2013, where I did ankle ligaments. I've never really had anything significant. So that's what that was a big shock. So I was kind of wondering how I deal with that. And you get chatting to different guys, obviously, the conversations that we mentioned before I had with, whether it was Tom or Andy or any of the other lads who would have gone through, Killian would have gone through longer term stuff, you kind of pick up some little nuggets from them. The biggest probably learning from it was have patience, I suppose. What I really struggled with at the start was knowing what was enough. So like what was enough to make sure I could be back playing, I could try, or I could test the system, if you like, and be back after 6 or 7 months and maybe play some National League. So at the start, when I had the operation at the end of August, the first couple of weeks, you're kind of, you're on crutches and you're just icing and getting swelling down. And then you start once I got back in the gym and I could move, I struggled at the start with, okay, do I need to be doing something 4 times a day, 2 times a day? And you're kind of looking for almost someone to check in with you, like you're nearly looking for a text from a physio every 3 hours and say, right, do this now and you'll be fine, you'll be back by the end of March. But they can't give, realistically they just can't give you that answer. So yeah. Once I got my head around that's just like, there's only so much to do. Sometimes you can actually overdo it, and that's again through conversation with the physios, where I didn't need to be doing something. You have to build in days off here and there as well, so you cannot be looking to do gym sessions twice a day. And because I didn't take any time off work apart from the 2 weeks after the operation, or a week and a half after the operation, I was home for the week, and then I was literally back at work. So I'd be in work and I'd have the leg up on the desk with the knee hab, which is kind of a quad stimulator on the leg inside the work pants, and they'd be wondering what the hell is going on. But I'd have the leg up on the table then just to for elevation, just to try and keep the swelling down. Just little things like that. But I'd be, again, yeah, the biggest thing, I got my head around that and I realised, right, yeah. I was really trying to figure out what was pain and what was soreness, I suppose, and what was just, I suppose, what was help in terms of knee exercises. The big thing that Enda has mentioned, Enda King has said, no knee pain, no matter what, no knee pain. Mm-hmm. Usually, for me, up until now, pain usually is a sign you're working hard, and that's a good thing. Mm-hmm. So in terms of exercising in the gym or running, if you're in pain, generally you're working hard, and that's where you make gains. So this is kind of turning that on its head. So again, once I kind of got to a point where I pushed it here, I knew in my head and my body what was pain and what was actually just a tough exercise. So once I got that around, then like literally I think from September, October, November, when I got back into heavier lifting, that was a period in November for a couple of weeks where it was kind of, I wasn't seeing any, like we mentioned before, I wasn't seeing any kind of tangible or quantifiable, you know, improvements. And then all of a sudden once kind of December, I was back running the first week of January, like literally just very basic straight line stuff. Then I could see stuff happening, and it was literally since the new year, it's been just getting better and better and better, and you could see improvements all the time. So there was only, I would say really, there was only a spell of maybe 2 or 3 weeks in, I'd say maybe around the end of October, November, that was really frustrating, and the rest was just, it's just following the process, I suppose, the old cliche. And just maybe seeing improvements, and thankfully it's gone to plan, and it's good to go. Just need to test it out now on a tackling drill.
Yeah, like you said, in the normal course of events, you'd be matching up to Oisín Mullen or Chris Barrett or Brendan Harris, and take your pick, I suppose. Maybe Lee Keegan might have a crack at you as well. But of course, there's nothing normal about what's going on in the world at the moment. And with that in mind, what's practical or what's possible for Jason Doherty at the moment in terms of training? Like, what are you doing to keep yourself ticking over? And what have you been asked to do by, be it Borough Shule or Mayo, just to keep yourself in shape?
As we were saying earlier, like my schedule, I'm lucky that I'm still working. I still have work, and my work routine, literally all this changes. I'm working at home from 8 to 5, as opposed to having to hop on the train or the bus into work for half an hour at the start of the day, at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. So nothing I have, which helps, I suppose, keep a routine in that, get up and my eating, my working, and then your downtime in the evening and your exercise. Nothing really has changed apart from, obviously, I'm not travelling home for the weekend now, or I'm not travelling to Midlands during the week. That's probably the main difference. Then in terms of just replacing the training, obviously, and the gym and stuff, I'm lucky that I have a park. The one from the Instagram post that you mentioned is within 2 kilometres away. I think it's 1.8.
Good to hear.
So that's a blessing, like, because the weather has been class as well recently. So I've been able to shoot down there 2 or 3 times a week, probably twice a week anyway. Wednesday, kind of Saturday, I try to go down and do my running, you know, the kind of conditioning work. I have a program that off Conor Finn and the guys, but they're being pretty, like, they're obviously, we're getting in touch to see what do they suggest. So he's given me a certain program to do to kind of keep the fitness up, or get the fitness up as well, because I was kind of doing more short distance stuff, so I've kind of got some more longer distance stuff now to get that up. I've got my rehab stuff, all the hopping and the jumping and stuff that I can do at the pitch, and then just touching the ball as much as I can as well. Like, this is a great opportunity to like, obviously using nearly the traveling time that I would usually be on to maybe just go to the pitch for 45 minutes and kick 30 or 40 frees, or kick, or just work on shots from play, all like with 3 or 4 things that I have picked and I want to improve from a skills point of view. So you just get more touches of the ball because in training, obviously, whatever you're doing drills, whereas now I literally try and just go out and have a go with it, just get as much as I can. And then the gym stuff, then I can do most of it now. I've had to, like, work with the guys, the physios, Mark and Brendan, and Enda, to tweak everything so that I can do it in the house. So literally replacing weights with bands and school bags with medicine balls in them, and TRX bands hanging off doors, and just trying to improvise, really. But I'm getting a good.
It sounds, Jason, like you've basically converted your apartment into Colin McManaman's house. Is that essentially what you've done?
Yeah. I rang him up for some advice. He sent up some stuff. I know, it's literally, under the stairs here is packed with all sorts of crap. So it comes out every twice a week as well. I have to do a session this evening now somewhere. Yeah, kind of, I'm changing rooms between the kitchen. I have a back garden that the weather's nice, go out there and do a bit, and
you're mixing it up
changing things up, get a taste of something different.
I was reading last weekend in, I think it was the Sunday Times, the Westmeath Hurlers, I think it is, have a Zoom quiz on a Wednesday night. The Clare football squad, I think, they take a look at some clips, analysis clips, and try and figure out kind of what happens next, essentially. What about ye guys with Mayo? Are you using Zoom or Microsoft Teams? Are you keeping in touch socially or officially, or is it a little bit more everyone doing their own thing?
Yeah, there's a big quiz being prepped now at the minute, because a lot of ammunition being thrown out now to try and build a quiz for us. We're going to do them on this weekend, by the looks of it.
If you need a quiz master, Jason, don't be stuck. I've got a lot of free time on my hands.
So does Rob Henley, though, so I'd say he'd probably need it out. we do. Obviously, we have the WhatsApp, and we would have done a lot of Zoom calls. Obviously, this year particularly was a big thing we went after to reduce the time for meetings at training, especially if we're travelling down midweek, and rather than waiting on for an extra 40 minutes or half an hour for a meeting that we might have it, you know, on a Monday night, have a call, a kind of catch-up call, just to set the layout, the plan for the week and all that stuff. So over the last few weeks, we haven't done as many, because in fairness, in fairness to James and the guys, they've allowed a bit of, almost like a recharge, use it as a bit of recharge. We're all doing our own bits. We're checking in with whether it's Evan for the nutrition or Connor for the fitness. We're all making sure we're maintaining this, but it's an opportunity for lads to kind of recharge and just be ready for whenever we get a bit more confirmation in terms of maybe timelines and stuff. So there's no real point, and I can see the logic of not going gung-ho now when there's so much uncertainty.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that. What's the message from James and the management team, or what has it been over the last, say, month, 6 weeks? Is it keep yourself in shape, be ready for when we know more? Is that pretty much what the mantra is?
Summary. Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, they're checking in, and while they're kind of giving lads a bit of free headspace, I suppose, just to unwind and kind of almost recharge, as if it was the end of the league and we were away with the club and coming back ready for it, you know, the championship come May. That's kind of, in a weird way, what it's kind of, it's just, I suppose, turned out in a kind of a different format than we probably would have expected. So, just keep fit. That's probably the one of the big things, yeah.
What's your own gut instinct? I mean, we're all listening to the same experts on, be it Prime Time or Matt Cooper and Ivan Yates. We're reading the papers. We're listening to the radio. Nobody seems too sure. But from a GAA perspective, from what you can see and from just your own bank of knowledge and experience, what do you think is realistic for the GAA, be it a club or county, in 2020?
Yeah, it's a tricky one. It probably changes every few days at the minute. Certainly, I've noticed over the last few weeks, it's a lot more, it seems to be a lot hotter topic in the media, and that I'd say they're probably gearing up for some form of announcement before around the 5th of May. So I think we will get some more clarity. I haven't given up hope yet. Obviously, the mass attendance of, is it over 5,000, kind of been shut down until the beginning of September, does probably raise questions around some inter-county games. Like my gut said, I think there's still a decent chance. I'm not mentally want to go to a place where it's completely ruling it out, because if I completely rule it out, it makes it kind of difficult it just makes it a bit harder to switch back on if it, all of a sudden we're kind of going, we can go back into group training that's going to be managed in terms of social distancing, and we're going to play behind closed doors, for example. So my gut is that I think there's still potentially some chance of some form of championship. I don't see it obviously taking the same format. I find it hard to believe that the league will be finished. But I'm not fully giving up hope. Obviously, the GAA obviously are leaning very much on HSE and WHO guidelines in terms of basically getting people like, because it all depends on the numbers they set, really, because if it's 100. There's a big difference between 100 and 500. You could maybe, like, even with 100, you'd struggle to even merely play behind closed doors with the amount of, between players, back from staff and all of that. Like, so there's a lot of, I suppose, factors that kind of will lead into it. So again, I'm trying to hold on to some hope, even if it's probably suggesting that it's really hard to know.
Just in terms of the whole area of social distancing, I can't really see Lee Keegan, for example, being a big fan of staying 2 metres from anybody or the aforementioned Chrissy or any of the Borough Shoe lads either. And, you know, as long as social distancing guidelines are still in play and we're led to believe they're going to be something we'll have to get used to for quite a long time, realistically then it's very hard to see football or hurling being played or even training sessions going ahead, isn't it, when we've all been told we've got to stay 2 metres apart. Is that probably the biggest worry for all of us who would like to see games taking place this year, that as long as social distancing is there and there isn't a vaccine, obviously, then that's the one we're all trying to figure out. How are they going to solve that one?
Yeah, like, I think, to be honest, like, relying on the vaccine is probably, there's no point wasting energy in that, because that could be 12, 18, 2 years away. So I think it's more a case of we're going to have to learn to live with the, I suppose, the restrictions that are put in place. So, of course, like, we have to be realistic with if the social distancing stuff is obviously still kept in, it does make it very difficult to train. You're not going to have maybe, you know, 5 or 6 lads training on the Tuesday, get 5 or 6 different lads on a different pitch. It's not very,
not practical.
It's not realistic. It's not practical, and it does make it very difficult. It's just whether they, all depends on the numbers, whether, it will be very difficult to manage, because even I know myself, my girlfriend's working in Tala Hospital, like, so me travelling home midweek to train social, even if it's socially distancing and potentially putting the lads and the lads' families at risk is something I probably don't want to be put in that position either. Like, so it's, there's a lot at play.
What's that been like, Jason, actually having your girlfriend on the front line? I mean, you've literally got it coming home to your house every other day. I mean, I'm sure you've got a glimpse into what the reality of this virus is like. A lot of us are, luckily, thankfully, we don't get exposed to that side of it. We haven't been dragged into it in terms of hospitals or the front line. But what's it been like living with somebody who is working and right there in the midst of it?
Yeah, it's bizarre in a way, like when you're she's coming home this evening and you're kind of, you have to stay away from her until she almost has the shower, gets rid of the clothes, all this kind of little stuff, because she's obviously, she's covered up for the day in the hospital and why. And yeah, she's now on the plus side, I suppose, she's kind of noticed over the last week or two that it does seem to have calmed down in a way, up in Tala Hospital certainly, and even in Dublin she's kind of suggesting that it does, like, because it was funny, like, at the start the hospitals were a lot quieter because people were afraid to go into the hospitals, so, and they've tweaked the kind of way they've assigned doctors to different wards and how they're, I suppose, housing the various patients now. They've kind of separated them into, you know, COVID positive and transition wards and COVID negative. And she's actually said that in some ways some of the changes have made work a little bit more manageable. So, but while she's not quieter on her, like, work is a lot, it's a bit more manageable. They've actually made some learnings out of this in a weird way. But yeah, it's different. So she's seeing it, like, she's coming home from, she has to do one 24-hour shift a week now, and she's coming home and she's dealing with potential COVID patients and positive patients that are beside her, like, so, like, obviously that puts her at huge risk and then potentially puts me at risk. So that's why I'd really have to think about even my ability to go, like, obviously I'm staying away from my parents in Mayo as well, and had been before, obviously, this kind of the 2 kilometre lockdown had come in. So it's just kind of, it means we're very much housebound here, apart from the heading to a park on a Saturday morning.
As a matter of interest, what does Caroline say when you ask her, do you think there'll be championship this year? Because I'm sure you do.
I'm not giving up hope, as I said. So she doesn't know what to do. I've been around for since last August. I've been basically around the house the whole time. She doesn't know. The cruise is the best thing that's ever happened to me, for her.
Yeah, she's never seen more of you.
Well, she's got used to it, yeah. And I've nearly got used to it as well. But I know she knows I'm only mad to get back on the pitch, and especially when you've gone to the effort of probably being ready to potentially play after, you know, what am I now? I'm nearly, probably about 8 months or 7 months, August. I think it's 8 months now. So, you know, I was ready to go at the start of the month, I would have thought. So, like, after making the effort to get back at a good time and feel good and do all that, and then for all of a sudden not to be able to test it out in a way, like, that's in a weird way, that's what I want to do. I want to see where it's at, and just play football. So she knows I need that. I need to get that out of my system as well. So she's, but we're making the most of it.
Yeah. Another topic of conversation that's come up quite a lot in the last week or two is how long GAA players can be left in the dark. Like, how long can the likes of yourselves keep training without knowing if there's going to be a championship or not? What are your thoughts on that? Like, when do you feel realistically you're going to have to know one way or the other? Like, at what point will the motivation, that drive that's there, will that start to wane because you don't know if there's going to be matches or not?
I could be lying if I said you don't get the odd day, the odd weekend, or even over the last 4 or 5 weeks, where you kind of go, oh, there's a good chance there won't be football this year. I don't need to do this running session, and there's days where I haven't done it, and then I've kind of felt guilty and had to do two sessions the following day. So you get your days like that, and those other days where you're extremely motivated and you just want to get out and I'll do the skills, I'll do the running, do the weights, and so you kind of go through different spells like that. I think you kind of have ups and weeks where you're kind of, you know, really on top of it, other weeks where you have to I suppose convince the devil on the shoulder telling you to, it's all right, don't bother getting up this morning to do this exercise, or watch telly this evening rather than do something else. So I think in that respect it's a funny one. Yeah, you just ups and downs. I'm really hoping we get some indication before the 5th of May. It kind of seems like they're gearing up towards something that, because you're right, like, realistically, yeah, I don't know if I could go on much longer. I think we just want to get some indication of timelines. You know, even if you knew, yeah, nothing's going to happen till October, you'd have something to work towards. But just tell us, kind of make a decision, maybe one way or the other, just to plan again, just so, like, I suppose guys can plan around it, really.
Hypothetically, worst case scenario, if there is no GAA activity, shall we say, in 2020, how does a guy like Jason Doherty, I know you don't even want to go there, but how does he fill in his hours? I mean, is it Netflix? Do you take up golf? I see sailing and singles tennis may get the go-ahead any day now to come back into gear. Could you see yourself taking up any of those sports?
Oh, I'd love to play a bit more golf. I'd love to get good at golf, never mind. if I could get good at it, I'd play it more often, yeah. Sure. Bit of Netflix, bit of golf, bit of... I'd still keep up the... I wouldn't be able to not keep up the... just kicking a ball, keeping fit, keeping the gym work up. There's plenty there to keep me occupied. It's got, like, the weekends feel about 4 days long compared to what they usually are when you're in the car, and on a Friday evening and a Sunday evening. Like, I just feel like just time now to even cook food and stuff like that is it's a small thing, but, like, it's a lot more relaxed. Especially up here as well, there's plenty to do if you're up here and you have time to do it. So I'd have no problem filling the time, believe me.
We mentioned you got the injury in August. You ground your way through the rehab. You got everything done. You got back on the training pitch, and now you're in this sort of pause mode. If we looked ahead to 2021, let's put 2020 to one side, regardless of what happens. But could you put into words kind of how keen you are to get back on the field again and how you think you will be when that happens? I mean, mentally, physically, do you feel you're going to be fitter, faster, stronger than you ever were before? Is that the plan?
I'd like to think so. Yeah. That was the plan from when I was home the week after I got the operation, was to, you quickly, I think we mentioned it before, when these things happen, I think the mind automatically feels sorry for a while, and then it goes into, right, I've seen it with a lot of athletes when you read different books, people getting injured, where they try to turn it into, it just seems to be an automatic thing to turn it into a positive. So you kind of go into, right, what improvements can I make? And the plan here is to come back better, stronger, faster, whatever it might be. So I definitely feel like I've made loads of gains in other areas, not just not just getting the knee right. So however keen I am now, I can only imagine how keen I am to play a bit of SPD or whatever it might be in 2021 if 2020 doesn't happen. So I'll be demented. I'll be ready to go. I'm ready to play football anyway.
There's our headline. Jason Doherty can't wait for FBD League. There's something you don't hear very often. Jason, thanks a million for joining us on the Mayo News Football Podcast. Last word, any plans for a beautiful, balmy Friday evening in Dublin with absolutely nowhere to go?
I'm about to hop around on one leg with my eyes shut as rehab for about an hour, and then I'll switch off, and I might even chance a healthy takeaway tonight to treat myself.
You're living it up. Yeah. Jason, thanks a million. Great to talk to you.
Good man. Cheers, Mike.
Jay Stryker are proud sponsors of this podcast when it absolutely, positively has to be financed on Wall Street. Visit our website at www.jstryker.eu. Jay Stryker are proud sponsors of this podcast when it absolutely, positively has to be financed on Wall Street. Visit our website at www.jstryker.eu.
And that's it for this week, except to say, John, you know, how are things going before?
Just at a personal level, the last episode I think we did, when I mentioned I was back, I was in the attic, I think it was Anne-Marie Flynn that said that she was kind of putting that out there as a metaphor that this nightmare for us will all be over at a time when I emerge from my attic. I'm happy to let Anne-Marie know that I have emerged from my attic for this particular episode, because I'm out in the office out the back of the garden. But maybe on the debit side, however, I can also reveal that I have grown a beard in the last few weeks. So I think that's definitely.
That's very hipster. Well,
I think in terms of us getting over this weird phase, I think that's a case of one step forward and two steps back.
John, can I ask a question? Is it Bomber Liston or is it Aidan O'Shea? Ooh. Or is it Kevin McLaughlin?
It's probably, if you're wondering about the colour, it's definitely more Bomber Liston.
I was more wondering about the grooming.
John, if you think of salt and pepper, it's more salt than pepper for sure. You know, it's kind of, it's
now you're talking Rob Murphy's language.
Bordered on Santa Claus, you know. But no, Rob, we're joking.
Yeah. By the way, have you seen Rob Murphy?
No, I've heard. Yeah, it's a.
Let's just say he's let himself go. I heard it was a suit situation.
All right.
Let's just be glad this is a podcast and not a video blog.
Now, there's an idea. There's an idea, guys.
If it'd be one thing, lads, if I was playing it awful safe and not doing too many visits to the shop, but I can't really use that as an excuse to sell razors. So yeah, that is one thing about these beards. Like, it's not like you can't buy a razor out there, folks. A bit rich coming from myself, though. Mike, how are you?
Yeah, all good, Rob. I'm just back from Westport, my weekly trip to the Mayo News office, and enjoyed it. I'm enjoying work. A lot more than normal, I suppose, you could say, because every week it gives you a chance to go and meet people outside your household and talk about something other than should we cut the lawn again, and you know, is there anything left to paint, and what should we watch on Netflix? So it's nice just to have adult conversation with different people every so often. But
I drove by a house there after dropping some groceries out to some needy people, and I saw four people out in the garden, two kids, the two parents, digging up shrubs and creating, planting new plants. Yeah. I don't know what they were doing. But it felt to me like a whole operation that had been talked about for days, had been sketched out, had blueprints and everything.
It's incredible, Rob. I think the Gardens of Ireland will never have looked better than they're going to look this summer. But I mean, the sky is saying, oh, Jesus, we need rain, this drought, you know, I mean, and we never called for rain up here in Dublin, but I think we're all about to do a rain dance now. I think Wednesday is promised wet, which is great because, I mean, we've spent the last while out in the garden as well, you know, so yeah, I mean, that's just the way it is. What can you do? You have to.
I suppose the weekends, Rob, I got to be honest, I think Jason made the point there in the interview that the weekends feel 4 days long. Well, for me, they feel about 7 days long because obviously I've spent the last 20-odd years working at least one of the 2 days, if not both, and that's been taken away. I did think at one stage, actually, I might get a nixer last weekend by getting the quizmaster duties for the Mayo squad quiz. But as you'll have heard Jason say, Rob Henley beat me to the punch. But I'm still open to offers. If, as the Americans say, if the Mayo squad want to reach out, maybe we can come to some sort of an agreement. It's not like I've got anything else.
Yeah, well, I just think put the effort in the club scene. Liam Horan's getting ahead of you in that. So that's the real battle, Mike. You have to put the hard yards in at club level. Get some club table quizzes under your belt.
Yeah, yeah. I leave that with me, Rob. That's the best way to put it. Leave that with me.
On that bombshell, the paper's looking good, no doubt. Really loved the Billy Joe Patton piece last week and Ciarán O'Hara's superb piece. Lots of great detail in it. We're going to explore that in the next episode. We're going to have another episode out pretty soon as well, because this has been one we've inserted in as a special with Jason Doherty. We'll delve into some of those topics, Mike, with Billy Joe, and maybe a bit further down the line as well with Ciarán himself. But tell us about this week's paper before we go. You got 60 seconds.
Yeah, this week's
seconds.
Paper, the Jason Doherty interview, you can obviously read all about that. I've also been talking to Peter Burke, the former Mayo goalkeeper, about the fact that this Wednesday, 19 years ago, Mayo won the National League. Peter just looks back on the 2001 League final, and he also reflects on his time as a Mayo selector. And he also touches on the fact that David Clark or Rob Henley or David Clark, and who better to give his opinion on that. And also we reveal the fact, or we begin to pull up the curtain on the fact that the Mayo News Top 100 Club Footballers series kicks off next week. So over the month of May, we'll be revealing the top 20 junior, top 30 intermediate and top 50 senior club footballers in Mayo, as selected by our judging panel. I think that's going to get a lot of debates and discussions going over the next few weeks.
Wow, that was a lot of work in the background. Just on Peter Burke, John, my God, he could shot. He was, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. It is, of course, 19 years since the 2001 final. But he was, and I mean, you know, continuing a good tradition of Cailte Mathmann between the sticks. As well, but Peter, yeah. Peter retired early as well, didn't he? I mean, he was, you know, he could have gone on for, Jesus, 7 or 8 years longer. Given if you look at the age David Clark is now, I think Peter bowed out in his early 30s. Mike, did he?
Yeah, Peter bowed out. I would imagine. Did he play in 2005? I don't think he did. That might have been his last season. He definitely played in the 2004.
He did, yeah.
So Peter wouldn't have been 30. Yeah. He would have maybe 29 in 04.
Yeah. I think Peter, in some ways, should be coming into their prime then. I don't think Stephen Cluxton didn't win in All-Ireland until he was well into his 30. 31 or 2 before he won the first one.
Was it a combination of injuries? I know he would have had a young family around that time.
I think so.
He played quite a bit of football as well, I suppose, when you consider he made his debut in 97. So, you know, his career had gone the guts of 10 years. He played in 2 All-Ireland finals. He won 2 Connacht Championship medals. But he was the epitome of the solid goalkeeper, you know, solid under a high ball. As you said, solid as a shot stopper. In fact, he was a very good shot stopper. And he had the lovely delicate kick out, but he could also drive it 90 yards. You know, he ticked he ticked all the boxes, Peter Burke. He was a terrific, terrific underage goalkeeper as well. And, you know, it's no surprise to hear him say in the interview that he really misses being involved with Mayo. He did from 2011 through to 2018 as goalkeeping coach, selector as well in his last year. And it's left a big gap or a big void in his life now, not being involved with Mayo. But no surprise to hear he's gone back in with Kilchumaugh, and he's upskilling there in terms of being a coach with the senior team. But yeah, had a really good chat with him, and it was just lovely to hear him reflect on 2001 and give his opinion on kind of how things have changed since.
All right, thanks for sticking with us, folks. We really appreciate your listenership, the messages. Keep sending us messages as well. If you got some voice recordings from around the world, we'd love to hear them, because we'll have that feature back next week, as we said, Billy Joe Patton and others coming along as well. We're still podcasting the football
it does well turning, John. I think the wheel of the world keeps turning anyway. Unfortunately, there's not that much football to talk about, but there's plenty to talk about on the margins, as I think I hope we've been proving the last while, and we'll continue to weeks ahead.
Well, let's put it this way: every day is a day closer. Indeed. To the next time we see Mayo play. Let's put it that way. That's it from us.
Cheers, Rob.
Take care, guys.
Evening, Rob. Take it easy.